There we go.
Aha.
There we go. Okay. Brother Eric John Phelps, welcome to the broadcast, 24/7 World Radio Podcast, with a special guest today, Brother Jeff Sullinger, a nutritional doctor, double board certified nutritionalist. And there isn't anything that I've ever talked with him about that he does not seem to be fully informed about. So this is my first time using Zoom for this, so hopefully it'll go well and it's going to be recording to the computer and I can download it and put it on the website. So, Dr. Jeff, welcome to the broadcast or the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Brother Eric. It's a pleasure to be here. All these challenges of technology today.
That's true. That's true. When you get a little older, it gets a little harder, but we're going to get through this by the grace of God.
Absolutely. This takes persistence and patience, I think.
Persistence, patience, you said it.
That's for
Right.
sure.
So what do you have for us today, my brother?
Well, I thought we might expand out a little bit to in the theme we've talked about before, which was energy. We've talked a lot about mitochondrial function. We've talked about aspects of that. And I thought today we might talk about magnesium, since magnesium is such a critical player in all of our health and well-being. I'll bet you most people listening here, or at least half, are probably magnesium deficient. It's such a common occurrence today and for a lot of reasons. So I think discussing magnesium, its relevance, some of the signs and symptoms might be helpful to everybody.
Well, isn't magnesium essential to keep yourself alkaline from in the alkalized pH scale?
It's very essential. Magnesium is involved critically in probably over 600 enzymes in the body. And if it's not present, the enzymes simply don't function or don't function well. And it's a major electrolyte. Cell physiology, cell function, mitochondrial function, we talked about a lot in the past couple of weeks, all require magnesium.
Now, there are four electrolytes, correct?
Yeah, basically there are. Some people might include bicarbonate in that, but yes, they all have to have some degree of balance. And it's also important to know where they are. Some belong inside the cell, some belong outside the cell.
Oh, because your four electrolytes, if I remember correctly, are magnesium, potassium, sodium, and calcium. Is that correct?
Chloride too.
And chloride, too. Okay.
Chloride's a critical one, yeah. And bicarb is part of the buffering that we need to buffer the acid.
I see, because bicarbonate is alkaline.
Correct, right.
Okay, so I kind of think that this is so important when we talk about magnesium, because not only for proper cell function, but to keep ourselves alkaline so these foreign pathogens don't grow in us, right? Because don't these pathogens grow in an acidic state?
They certainly make us much more susceptible, that's for sure. And I was looking at an interesting statistic from the Price-Pottinger Foundation of years ago, and they said that it takes 56 molecules of magnesium to process one molecule of sugar.
Really? So sugar, white sugar, the sucrose, is a drain on magnesium.
And a lot of, and a big reason why people become deficient, because a lot of people do try to live on a high carbohydrate, high processed carbohydrate, a high carb diet, and magnesium stores are kind of thin, and that can be depleted rather quickly.
So with the simple carbohydrates like potato chips and white bread, that reduces our magnesium stores, right?
Right. Exactly.
So is it any wonder why the grocery stores are full of snacks and breads that deplete your magnesium?
It's pretty common.
Okay.
Pretty common. And unfortunately, most people, including most in the medical field, really don't focus at looking at symptoms of magnesium deficiency.
Because if they did, they would see that, well, these symptoms of magnesium deficiency we also find in cancer or heart disease or diabetes, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's pretty ubiquitous across the board when you look at how magnesium plays such a central role in cell function. Depending upon what cells are most critically hit, whether it's the heart, the brain. I mean, the brain requires an inordinate amount of energy just to function. 25% of all of our calories are consumed by the brain.
That makes perfect sense because it has to create electricity to drive all the electrical connections throughout the entire central nervous system, through the spinal cord, out to the vital organs. And so that takes all sorts of energy. So are you saying then for the creation of that energy, we have to be up on our magnesium stores?
Well, we do. And even to produce some of the neurotransmitters that people have heard about GABA, serotonin, and so forth. Many of these to be produced in the brain do require, and I should not just say the brain, but also in the digestive system, require magnesium be present to actually make those neurotransmitters.
Without neurotransmission, there is no thought process. I mean, doesn't it
Well,
take?
and what's interesting is that when you talk about just serotonin, which people are somewhat familiar with because there's lots of drugs that claim to modify it, but 95% of the serotonin we make in our body is made in the intestines, not the brain.
Okay. So if you've got a toxic colon or toxic small intestine, you're not going to be making serotonin.
Or you're making an imbalance in other neurotransmitters too. I mean, there's excitatory neurotransmitters that stimulate, of course, the gas pedal effect, and there's the calming inhibitory. So for us to function, we have to have the right balance at the right moment.
I see.
There is no real balance because it would depend whether you're driving in traffic, that might be one balance, or you're studying for an exam, that's a different balance, or you're laughing hysterically at a funny movie. They're all different balance states. There's no one fixed balance for neurotransmitters.
So it's constantly in flux.
Constantly changing as we adapt to and interact with the stimuli that affect our body, our minds, and our body perception.
Wow. Intriguing. Go ahead, Doc. I didn't mean to get you off topic.
Well, no, it is intriguing, but let's look at some very, very common symptoms. I mean, they're almost classic, and I would imagine some people listening will identify them in themselves or people that they know well. Certainly fatigue, whether it's physical fatigue, mental fatigue, because the body requires magnesium in the energy production process, fatigue is a big indicator. It's not the only indicator. I mean, fatigue is kind of a universal complaint with ineffective functioning, but fatigue is a big one. Irritability. Low magnesium people are very irritable and very quick to anger. They have a short fuse.
I see. So if you can get a population magnesium deficient, you're going to have a bunch of short-fused poop people. You're going to get angry quickly, and that's going to have a propensity to criminal activity, and that would in turn justify more of a police state to control this criminal activity. So could you say magnesium deficiency furthers a martial law scenario for those who want to impose it, like the Jesuits?
Well, it certainly gets us to be hyperreactive and maybe reacting before we think. Because if we're easily moved to anger and if we're extremely irritable, it doesn't take much provocation to get us reacting. And a lot of times that's not reacting by conscious decision, it's reacting in the more primitive fight or flight part of our being. So we're ready to fight or flight, and that may not always be the best decision. You know, there I can think of situations where that may not be a good choice, even though it may be a primitive instinctive choice. And magnesium deficient people are typically, this is another kind of a giveaway, they're usually noise sensitive. These are the people that are always kind of saying, can you turn that TV down? Why is that stereo so loud? Can you turn the car radio down?
Sounds like me.
They don't like loud noise and they're startled by sudden loud noises. It's very irritating. Because magnesium is a calming element in our nervous system. It's an inhibitory one. And when you don't have a lot, you're easily overstimulated.
One
This
thing
kind of makes sense.
it does. One thing I take to try to be up on my magnesium is spirulina. You know, it's highly alkaline, highly magnesium. It's so dark green, it's almost bluish in color.
Absolutely. I
So
take it myself, yes.
very good. Okay.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, if you look at the molecule of chlorophyll, which is basically what carries magnesium, chlorophyll, if you looked at the structure and compare it to hemoglobin, they're almost identical, except that the center molecule in chlorophyll is magnesium and the center atom in hemoglobin is iron.
Yes, that's right. Amen.
But the structure around that is almost molecule for molecule the same.
I know of someone who would take lots of spirulina and chlorophyll, recommend that to people who had blood loss, because the only thing that needs to be added to that is like an organic iron. So if you took lots of magnesium, lots of chlorophyll, lots of spirulina, whatever, if you had a blood loss and you couldn't get a transfusion, water with spirulina and chlorophyll with a good iron, like juice out of beef, would help to rebuild that. Does that make sense to you?
Sure, and also with beef, you would also be getting copper.
Mm-hmm.
And copper is probably the unsung hero in a lot of anemic situations. We need the copper to properly utilize the iron. There are a lot of people, women in particular, who may have chronic anemic conditions and they're taking iron and it's just not working. Of course, that could also be due to not absorbing it, but for a lot of these women, they don't have enough copper to utilize the iron, and they keep taking iron, 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 but that's not really making the change in their blood chemistry.
I see. So if you wanted to have a try to replace your blood as soon as you could, you can have spirulina, chlorophyll, iron from meat or like a soup out of that and with clop copper. Does that make sense?
Sure, in the old days, people would go to liver. Calf's liver.
Calf's liver, yes. Okay.
Liver and onions.
Liver and onions. Rebuild, so it rebuilds your blood supply if you have blood. So,
Right.
okay. Because I'm concerned if we have some sort of national breakdown, we're not going to get to the hospital. And so if we have any blood loss, we need to know how to replace that as safely and as quickly as possible. And this topic of magnesium is really key to this, I believe.
Well, it's key, and also getting ourselves in the best shape possible before any kind of unforeseen catastrophe or emergency. You know, many things may be less readily available in that time. So, if we are aware that we have a tendency towards anemia or other issues, it'd be a good time to start now to try to remedy that.
And anemia is low iron, correct?
That's one form of anemia. There's several different forms. There's what they call macrocytic, where the cells become very large, macro, and there's microcytic, where they become quite small. Microcytic is typically tied to iron and or copper. Macrocytic anemia, where there's fewer cells but they're very large, is often tied to a deficiency in vitamin B12 and or folate.
I see. I see. So that's why it's good to eat red meat because it's full of B6, B12, and folic acid, right?
Yeah, it's got this. And the folate we'd have to get probably from foliage, which is where the name comes from. So we have to have the green vegetables or the folate, not folic acid, but folate, the natural form. And that plus the an iron source like that, like liver or animal protein, would provide all of that.
So we ought to have liver and onions once a week, once every 2 weeks, something like that.
Probably a great idea to do. Now, a lot of people are going to hear that and say, you've got to be kidding. Because not everybody likes the taste or texture of liver, understandably so. But it'd be a good food to consider. You can get freeze-dried or lyophilized liver in capsule form or powder form if one finds it impossible to take it a meal.
Well, if you cook your liver and add some onions and some garlic, little Bragg's amino acids, and a little spice, maybe a little herbs, it should cover that liver flavor. I've kind
It
of.
really should. It really should. Depends on people's what they're accustomed to, I guess, or conditioned to. Yeah, but yeah, you can cover it. I mean, it's just plenty of creative ways that people have evolved to do that.
Okay, back to magnesium, young man.
So we talked about irritability, short fuse, short temper, hyper irritable. Muscle spasms, muscle cramps, people who may get calf cramps at night or toe cramps at night, even the eyelid that twitches for no particular reason, seemingly very often, that's tied to a magnesium, maybe an electrolyte, but certainly a potential magnesium deficiency.
Twitching, I've seen. I used to have that many years ago, and then I had a guy punch me in the nose and thought it'd make it better, but it didn't work. No, I'm just teasing. But I found out it was a magnesium deficiency. Then it went away. But I've known several guys that had this twitch, the eyelid twitch.
Well, cramps at night, a lot of people suffer with really excruciating, cramps in their calves where they get out of bed and they're all cramped up and it's hard to even put weight on the foot. For people prone to that, they might want to try a little experiment and simply get a good quality magnesium supplement in a capsule form and have it by their bed. And if they get the cramp at night and they're in that painful situation, they can pull the capsule apart, dump the magnesium powder out of the capsule under their tongue, and see if in 5, 10, 15 minutes that magnesium going in sublingually actually dissolves the cramp.
Believe it. And
It's
also,
an easy test.
wouldn't you say that most people are dehydrated anyway? So they need to have the magnesium under the tongue plus water. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many issues with the American population. I mean, dehydration, highly processed foods, increasing numbers of mineral and nutrient deficiencies. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So teasing them apart is a challenge, but we're talking about magnesium, which is a highly a common issue among the population. And women will see it manifesting in the premenstrual syndrome symptoms because you need magnesium for women to make progesterone. So if they cannot produce enough progesterone in the week or 10 days or so before their menstrual period, they're going to have a lot of irritability and short temper and cravings and things like that.
Won't they have a menstrual pain too?
Yeah, they all get cramps. Again, it goes back to cramping.
So really, they shouldn't have cramps if they're properly with the proper nutrients. If you have plenty of magnesium, is that true?
Well, if they have enough magnesium and from that they can produce enough of the hormones from that. So again, you need enough progesterone. You have to have the progesterone produced at the right time. That gets into the timing aspect. And then it has to be able to get to the receptors to work, provided they're not all clogged up with plastics and chemicals
Yes.
and
Oh, yes.
toxic additives and all the fun stuff that people are
Sure.
full of.
Plastics. I'm so glad you said that. So therefore, if women want to have no cramping for their menses, because I don't think that's normal, then they have to be properly given the nutrition to be able to avoid that. Does that make sense? I knew a woman when she was in the Air Force, black gal, I knew her. And she was from Chicago, and she used to get the most horrible cramps. And one of the ladies in church was a good friend of hers, and I said, well, her name was Dot. And I said, well, get Dot to take some magnesium or something green. And it did help her. But just horrible cramps. You could bend over in agony, and that's.
Yeah, and even in that same circumstance, if one had it, and most people in this country are familiar with Epsom salts, putting a cup of Epsom salts in a a bucket of warm water, sticking your feet in there.
So through the feet it would be absorbed.
Actually, yes, right through the feet, right through the skin. If they have a bathtub, they can put a couple of cups of Epsom salts in a tub, comfortably, excuse me, warm water, and do transdermal uptake. And that's very relaxing because of the magnesium through the Epsom salts. So these are nice things. But I would also kind of add a comment. You don't want to wait until the low oil light comes on to fix the problem. I mean, if we're doing this every single month in a woman, then there's a larger issue. Maybe the tank for magnesium is quite depleted, and you don't wait till the symptoms appear.
Right. Yep. So taking care of our health is a daily thing we have to do, eating the right foods, right nutrients, the right kind of food, if we expect to be normal and not taken over with these. Well, the effect of aging.
I try to encourage people to think of taking care of themselves as kind of like gardening.
You're right. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's a perpetual task. You do it all the time. You don't weed once 3 years ago and say, "Well, I weeded once 3 years ago. I have no idea why there's weeds in my garden."
I was like, well, I parasite cleansed 2 years ago and I
You're
won't.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and did you go out to a restaurant? Did you have a salad in a restaurant that you didn't wash the produce in? I mean, come on, people.
We're constantly getting infected, so we have to constantly set it back, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's maintenance. It's just being aware of the environment, the interaction between us and the environment, how careful we are, how casual we are. If you have pets, cats and dogs, you're probably exposed to parasites more than people who don't, but that's not 100% guarantee.
Brother, I say that's the major cause of this huge, massive parasitic infection we have in this country. All these dog women, they got to have their dogs or the cats, and they're kissing them and they're getting licked in the face, and it's going right down to their small intestine, those little microscopic parasites, and then they start to grow. So I really believe that this dog fanaticism and the cat fanaticism has contributed to this massive parasitic infection.
Well, I remember listening not too long ago to Dr. Lee Merritt. I know you listen to her. She's pretty brilliant, and I enjoy her open thinking process. But she was saying, why is owning a dog for a child under 5 years old a risk factor for developing MS?
Whoa, what a question. What'd she say?
She said parasites.
That's right, because the parasites are causing MS.
And the child at that age, under 5 years old, has a very incomplete blood-brain barrier and a very incomplete intestinal barrier. So it's more easily transmitted into the brain. And that's her position. I mean, why would you think having a lap dog under age five being a risk for multiple sclerosis?
What a tremendous sentence that it was. That is that concept. So it's a very simple solution. It's not anything etheric and adroit that only the medical doctors can figure out. It's very simple and common, and we ought to be taught that.
Well, we have to also practice in inductive reasoning, not just deductive reasoning. And that's why I think we're so trapped in that deductive reductionistic model of the allopathic medical field, where nobody can do inductive reasoning. And that's what we need sometimes, because you can't test for everything.
That being cause and effect, right? Inductive.
Well, cause and effect, or at least probabilities, sure.
That's tremendous. What a concept. Why dogs for children under five can cause MS with the parasites that they lick them with. Because I found out from a chiropractor, he says, Eric, when a dog licks you, that saliva goes under your skin and those microscopic parasites go into your bloodstream. And they go right to the small intestine and start reproducing. I was utterly floored and shocked. And then I started parasite cleansing. And what came out of me was the most ungodly thing I've ever seen. Big, long helmets, I would venture to say 18 inches long, 3/8 of an inch in diameter. And I thought, this is horrible. But after I parasitic cleansed, I didn't have any more joint pain. I felt lighter, had more energy. And I thought, parasitic infection. I wonder how long I had that, or having to have these great big things in me to come out of me.
Yeah, and you know, who knows who else has that or more. I mean, they're the quote unquote easy ones. It's the intracellular parasites that are so hard to identify. I mean, I don't know if it's still recommended, but I know years ago it was a common admonition for pregnant women to never tend to a cat litter box.
I remember that.
Remember that?
I do, back in the 50s and the 60s.
Now, I don't know if they still make that admonition because they used to talk about never eating, you know, tuna and things because of the mercury. But one big one was do not let a pregnant woman near a cat's litter box. And that was because of toxoplasmosis.
Toxoplasmosis. And that is, again, Doc?
That's an intracellular parasite.
Intracellular parasite. That's hard to get out.
It's hard to get out, and most people don't screen for it.
Yeah.
I mean, estimates are, I can't remember exactly, but they're quite shocking that some huge percentage, like, I don't know, 30% of the population has toxoplasmosis.
Yes. Makes sense. Perfect sense. And of course, they're not going to use frequency treatment or light frequent, like Rife frequency or Rife light, because that would kill the parasites immediately on contact. And you can't do too much of it because you're going to have a die-off so big that you're going to get constipated. So, because that's what happened to me. So you got to slow the die-off and slow what you're doing until you start getting them killed off, and then ultimately they'll go. But there's such a huge amount of parasites that if you kill them all at one time, it could clog you up, or who knows?
Well, that's one of the risks that you see with river blindness, which is one of the conditions seen a lot in Africa and so forth, where ivermectin was developed. And if somebody had a really, really advanced case of river blindness, and I do not know the symptoms, I've never seen a case, and you treated them correctly with the medication, the die-off could be so profound that it could be almost lethal.
Yes, almost lethal. Yes.
Because they have so much in them that is being killed, especially if it's in the brain, and they get brain inflammation from the die-off.
Makes sense.
So it's not without risk. And it's not because of the drug itself. It's because of the effects of the drug creating the die-off.
Yeah, that makes sense. I used to listen to Dr. Gary Young, and he was privy to a surgery once, where this woman had this huge belly, and the doctor said, "You're full of parasites." And so he took her into surgery, and the moment he put the incision into her stomach, the parasites blew out of her, blew against the wall that was behind them. It was horrid. And I just wonder how many of these people with these bloated bellies is just one huge, massive ball of parasites.
Well, you have to wonder, and nobody's screening because in this country, parasites are typically thought of as a third world problem.
Right.
I mean, we don't have them; we're too clean.
Oh, where's
Third
more?
world countries do, and I wish that were the case, but it's not.
And of course, the parasites are going to deplete your magnesium, right?
Well, yeah, that and you know they have to eat and they also excrete and they make a lot of toxic byproducts that they secrete into us.
Which makes us
So, you
acidic.
know, it's a problem. it's a complex problem.
That's why the people need to call you, Doc, and say, "Well, I feel this way, and where should we start?" See? So for the listener, you need to talk to Dr. Jeff. He'll give his contact information when we're done here. But you see, I just want to stress how all these things are intertwined, and it makes it so that we can figure it out ourselves, and with a little help from people like you, because we learn the basic ropes and the effects of these electrolytes or magnesium. And then if we're off, then we can say, "Well, it's probably..." I worked with a guy pouring concrete, and we would go out to breakfast in the morning, and he was a big guy, but he wasn't taking care of his health. And all of a sudden, his legs shot up underneath the table and kicked me. He said, "Eric, I'm sorry. That happens at night sometimes." I said, "Barry, that's a magnesium deficiency." So that contracting or of the muscles too could be a magnesium deficiency. Does that make sense?
Well, it certainly does, and nobody is immune. Big or small, male or female, whatever. I mean, you're still prone to the same issues based upon how you live and what you eat and the stress you're under. Medications are big causes today for magnesium deficiency and depletion.
Well, most of these medications are acidic, right?
Well, they are, but a lot of them actually interfere. I mean, how many people today are on some kind of Prilosec or Nexium or some kind of a Protonix as a stomach acid blocker, Pepcid, that kind of thing? All of those inhibit magnesium absorption.
I'll never forget, I was in ACAM meeting once, and it was for the Advancement of Medicine, American College for the Advancement of Medicine. And I was in this one particular seminar, and the doc got up and he said, "Doctors," of course, I'm not, but I managed to get in the seminar. I don't know, managed to get in. He said, "Everything we prescribe is liver toxic and acidic." And when he said that, I nearly fainted because, I knew that, but I would never think an allopathic medical doctor would say anything. But yeah.
A lot don't know now, and again, I mean, it seems like anybody today with any kind of complaints gets some kind of a stomach acid, omeprazole, Nexium, that kind of thing, antacids. Many of them are aluminum hydroxide based products, antibiotics,
Oh my.
which are given commonly. I mean, all these things inhibit magnesium absorption. Then you have people taking drugs for blood pressure, hypertension, maybe a hydrochlorothiazide, which is a very old drug, but it works. It also dumps out magnesium.
Wow.
So the more magnesium you deplete, the more you're going to have hypertension, the more you absolutely must have the drug.
Yes. How convenient.
What a business model.
How convenient. When I was growing up, because I maintained because of the vaccinations, I had earaches. I had earaches, a horrible earache every 2 weeks. And so it was like somebody was driving a nail into my head. And so naturally, my dear mother would take me to the hospital. And what would I get? I would get penicillin and bisillin. I think those deplete your magnesium too, don't they? So I was depleted by the time I was 5 years old. And then with that depletion, who knows about the stunting of growth and how that affects the pineal gland and if it doesn't create the right what hormones to make things grow. So we have a stunted population now because of all these antibiotics. Does that make sense?
Well, what if mom is deficient in magnesium? She becomes pregnant. She has all the different symptoms during her pregnancy of low magnesium. She gives birth to a child, and the child is born low in magnesium.
Which probably facilitates crying and not being a happy baby. I can think of a couple babies that I was around like that. I know she was depleted in magnesium and
I
he
mean,
was.
we have an interesting assumption that is really not articulated all the time, but the assumption is often that when a baby's born, they start with a clean slate and they go up or down from there.
Yeah, that was always my presumption, unfortunately. Yeah.
But if you're, if mom's high in mercury or high in aluminum or high in lead, it's transferred to the child, but it's not a genetic transference. It's a cellular inheritance.
Makes perfect sense. And then the cleft palate thing. I'm sure you've seen a lot of that in Central South America.
Absolutely.
I think that's a B deficiency, isn't it?
It's folate deficiency.
Folic deficiency. So here they are, born with a cleft palate, deficient in folate. And if they're deficient in that, what else are they deficient in?
Absolutely. Yeah, usually deficiencies do not appear in a singular one at a time fashion. It'd be much too easy. They're usually in clusters, which is also based upon how people eat. If you're not a vegetable eater and you think you can get through life without eating vegetables and green vegetables, good luck.
Good luck. Yeah, if you think you can eat beans and rice and that's enough, good luck. I'd say that's the cause of all the cleft palates in Central and South America.
And if you add in various genetic polymorphisms where they don't metabolize or they don't convert folate properly, or they have a folate receptor issue where they can't absorb the folate, you magnify it. And they're not uncommon.
And being polymorphic, they're going to morph into something else, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would love if I could get some grant money, I'd love to go down there and take and look in the population and do some genetic testing. It's not terribly difficult to do and not terribly expensive, and look at the incidence of cleft palate and cleft lip and look at the genetic profiles. I mean, that to my knowledge has not been done, but I'll bet you it correlates. Because if you look at the conventional medical literature, let's say, well, there's conflicting studies on folic acid being responsible or not. I said, yeah, but you're missing the point. It's not the folic acid, it's how the body uses or absorbs the folic acid.
So you're going to a cellular level explanation.
You really have to, you know. You really have to. Because I've seen a lot of people where they go to their medical doctor and they have a battery of tests done, which is fine, and they come back with a really high serum or blood folate level, and they say, "Oh my gosh, you're taking too much folic acid," which is an interpretation at one level. But when you actually go in and do more investigation, if you and you do genetic testing, they have damaged folate receptors, so they can't get it into the cell, so it stays high in the blood.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense.
It does. At that level, it makes sense.
So
But at the other level, it doesn't make sense.
something may be jamming up the receptors.
Yeah, or it's genetic. And now we know there's epigenetic factors, which is adding to the understanding of all this. And the newest understanding is the mitochondrial health affects the expression of genes from the nucleus. So, the layers of complexity expand. But it's also an important point of entry into making our lives better.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And we can see real recovery take place when
Right.
doctors like yourself just apply these principles of cellular health and watch them get better. I mean, that's what a naturopath does and a homeopath and nutritionalists. And that's why the allopaths hate you guys, because you are cutting in on their monopoly of gut-brain.
Well, I've always said there's plenty of sick people. Nobody needs to fight over whose patient is whose, you know?
Yep, you got a point. But they love a monopoly. They got to have their monopoly. And any threat to that monopoly, we're going to go after that individual that's a threat.
That's right. I mean, there's plenty to go around. There's no need to compete for patients. Come on. But, just the
Yeah, sure is. Okay, back to our magnesium. And we have a few more minutes left. So if you want to make a few more points, brother, and then we'll have to go. And I'm going to have to experiment how to turn off the recording here on Zoom because it's going to be my first experience. But go ahead.
Yeah, and I think just being aware of all this too. I mean, even with another common complaint in our culture is osteoporosis.
Terrible.
And everybody in the conventional and TV medicine, shall we say, says
Oh,
calcium, calcium, calcium.
great term, TV medicine. Thank you.
I mean, if somebody's getting their medical advice from the television, there's a serious problem
Well, it's all
here.
allopathic medical
You
advice.
know.
Yeah, it's allopathic medical device.
Right. If your doctor is CNN, time to
Or a
switch
doctor
doctor.
on CNN. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Getting the mainstream narrative. But a
Yeah.
lot of people take, tons and tons of calcium thinking that, I guess, thinking that osteoporosis is like stalactites and stalagmites in the cave.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It's not, as I understand, it's just little tiny holes. But
Well, it's a demineralization. I mean,
demineralization.
osteoporosis is demineralizing. So, what drives demineralization?
Acidity, sugar consumption, simple carbohydrates.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, therefore, these older people fall down and break a hip because they're full of osteoporosis, little tiny holes in the pelvis and the femurs or whatever. So that since there's no repair of that with right organic calcium, like I drink lots of goat's milk and goat raw goat cheese and raw eggs, and so if we don't have our raw milk and raw cheese, raw dairy, well, that will facilitate it. And is it any wonder why the bastards want to outlaw it?
Do you remember the work of Dr. Robert O. Becker?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
He has a book out. What was it called?
Oh, The Body Electric, I think,
Body
wasn't it?
Electric. The Body Electric. That's right. Classic work. Every listener should have it in their library.
And he was one of the first docs to be deplatformed before we had a platform.
I see.
In the 70s. Yeah, he was doing work for the military. And when he came up with how the body regenerates, they shut him down and defunded him pretty fast. But he was showing that in bone health, which was a lot of his model, that you, if the body, if the bone had 1/1,000,000,000th of 1 amp DC current, the bone would rebuild and regenerate.
Well, that's why you have your Rife machines with current at certain frequencies to help rebuild. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, but you know, if you take it a step further, because he went to a point that was again the 70s, I think 73 or 76 when he was deplatformed and defunded. And now we know that a lot of that
No,
DC
let's say it right, Doc. When he was defrocked, that's what happened.
defrocked. There we go,
The
right.
Church of Modern Medicine defrocked him. Thank you, Robert Mendelson.
Yeah, and now we know with new information that a lot of that DC current voltage actually comes from the energy we get from the sun.
Okay.
So if we get outside and get some infrared, red, near infrared, ultraviolet on our skin, and that's collected by the melanin, that provides the energy to create the DC electric current.
Okay, so that creates the DC to create the electric current, because of course we are direct current creatures.
Right, absolutely.
AC.
And what are we surrounded with? AC.
I know. So it couldn't have been a better plan. We'll just surround them with AC and make sure we have plenty of telephone poles and telephone wires and just radiate them day after day after day. And we're going to stop any sort of development of DC current in a home or DC appliances or any kind of that. And so we can keep them good and sick, or at least not able to think correctly.
Because Becker said that bones don't repair. Bones regenerate,
Okay, they
but
regenerate.
you have to have that 1/1,000,000th of 1 ampere current DC, and that's what triggers it.
Wow. I know an Amish man, you know what he does? He grabs on to the positive and negative charges of a battery. And he holds on to that for like 3 or 4 minutes. He does it every
Is
day.
that right?
Yeah, he does. So he gets this direct current in him every day
Wow.
while he utilizes his raw milk and raw cheese on his farm.
He's getting some amperes too.
Yeah, he's getting some. He's going to get the DC current as a little bit of amps, because we're only 12 volt, and makes sense.
Wow.
I had a tooth that cracked when I went to have a class in Washington State. A lady worked in Idaho across the border line, so I used to give her a ride. And when I was coming back to where I was staying, there was this place where they had this jerky. Well, I'm kind of a sucker for good jerky if it's organic. So I was stopped in and got some jerky, and as I was driving back, I noticed a tooth cracked, felt a crack in my molar. So I went to my dentist when I got back, and she said, "Eric, you're going to have the tooth pulled." And I said, "I'm not going to pull the tooth." "Well, then it's just going to rot and disintegrate, and you're going to have to pull it anyway." So I prayed about it, and I started drinking large doses of goat's milk, my goat's milk here, and eating the goat cheese and the raw eggs. And the next time I went to the dentist, she says, "You don't have a crack in your tooth, Eric. What did you do?" Well, I told you how I ate, and she found that very hard to believe, but it worked. And so no tooth pulled. So
That's an amazing story.
yes, it is.
That's a truly amazing story.
No pain either, because that thing hurt.
I'll bet it did.
Well, so that's another testimony how the body is what regenerating.
Well, we're conditioned to not believe it. We're conditioned to externalize our healing to others. We're conditioned to believe that we are helpless, and we turn to the experts.
Yes, and they're the gods that heal us with all their special knowledge that ultimately hurts us in the end. Yeah. Hey, well, Doc, I want to thank you for your time for with us today, and me, us, and the listeners. That's why I say us. And thank you for your wonderful plethora. How do you like that word?
That's a
Plethora.
good word. I like that word.
Like that word? Your plethora of knowledge on a host of topics all ties together. And hopefully our listeners have learned a couple of new vocabulary words that they can add to their lifestyle. Because we should be learning something every day. And if you want to maybe close with a summation and make sure you give us your contact info.
Yeah, today we try to touch on one very important aspect to energy production in our bodies, and that's the mineral magnesium. And some common symptoms often revolving around irritability of the nervous system, things like easily aroused anger, noise sensitivity, startling easily, cramps, spasms, things of that nature. But also how magnesium plays a very central role in producing energy in all of our cells, and how we often deplete it unknowingly through high carb diets and high sugar intake and medications that can block the reabsorption of magnesium. So it's a complex issue, but one that's important to step into and explore if you're having issues.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And you can help people discover their magnesium deficiencies if they contact you.
Yeah, there's lab tests you can do. The right lab test is a little bit harder to find. I like to go by symptoms and then a clinical trial, but there are tests you can do to look at that. And again, most symptoms are not singular. They usually come in clusters.
Yeah. So how would they contact you, Doc, if they'd like to?
Best way to reach me, at least initially, would be by email, and very simply, that'd be info, I-N-F-O, info at Center for Nutrition, one word, dot net.
Amen. Well, again, Doc, thanks so much for being with us and appreciate
My pleasure.
people giving you. Do you have a Cash App that they can send to you?
I do not at this time, but I probably should look into that.
Yes, you should, young man. So what I'll do is I'm going to recommend you, and I think they give me an extra $5 for that. So,
All right. Good deal.
amen. Okay, Doc. Well, thanks. Lord bless, and we'll be in touch.
Okay. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.